Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 19th of December. This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about a bit of a controversy, spending on the military and on a provision of the budget that reduces the annual cost of living adjustment for military retirees by 1%. Our guest this hour has written in a piece, here's why the proposed military retiree benefit cuts are no big deal. He says that, not surprisingly, the provision in the Ryan Murray budget that reduces the annual cost of living adjustment for military retirees by 1% is provoking outrage among some parts of the military lobby. But the claims by these critics are misleading. Our guest this hour knows the military pretty well. Lawrence Korb is with us. He is a senior fellow, federal budget, military, and national security at American Progress, also a senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information and adjunct professor at Georgetown University. He served as assistant Secretary of Defense for Manpower, Reserve Affairs, Installations, and Logistics from 1981 through 1985. And during those years, he administered about 70% of the defense budget. So he has a long history with the military issues that we'll be talking about this hour. Well, welcome phone calls for Lawrence Korb. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page, where you are always welcome to leave messages. And we're now just 8 people away from 4,000. We'd like to hit that. Oh, 2 people away. Are you serious, KP? 2 people away. So that could happen today. That's good, huh? Because there is a lot of information there on this issue and many other issues, and that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. We're also on Twitter, @KDunnShow. Lawrence Korb, thank you very much for being with us.
It's nice to be with you again.
Yeah, very nice to have you here. Why don't you outline for us what it is that this budget provision has to say about military pay for retirees?
Well, what it says is that if you draw military pay. Right now, what happens, you get 50, depending on how long you serve, but they take your last 3 years of base pay and they give you a percentage anywhere from 50 to 100%. 20 years, you get 50%, and then it goes up accordingly. And what this says is that if you retire before age 62, rather than giving you the full, what we call COLA, cost of living allowance, increase each year, you're going to get 1% less than that. But when you become 62, it's recomputed, and so then you go back to where you would have been. And it's basically for working age retirees, because most people who retire in their 40s are not going to do nothing. They're probably going to get another job. And as Congressman Ryan said, you know, this is the beginning. We have to deal with military compensation, because even our military leaders say if we don't do anything, we're going to be like General Motors. You know, we're going to be paying, you know, people who work now and used to work here and their health care not be able to buy any weapon systems or anything, because military compensation is rising so much more rapidly than the overall budget.
Mm-hmm. And let's just talk generally about military compensation. Do you make a decent living, and are the levels of pay quite different depending on what your rank is? But can you make a decent living in the military?
Well, sure. You see, what happens, and, you know, I happen to draw military retirement as well, so I'm quite familiar with this. I spent 4 years on active duty as a naval flight officer and another 20 in the Navy, in the Navy Reserve. What happened is, when we had, up until we had a volunteer military, when you went into the service, whether you were drafted or whether you volunteered so you wouldn't have to be drafted, enlisted people got roughly about $80 a month and officers got $200. When I went in, I got a pay cut from being a New York City high school teacher.
Oh, really?
Yeah, when I went in. And the feeling was you owe the country, you know, 2 years, and, you know, we had conscription and, you know, most people served. Obviously, some people knew how to beat the system, but by and large, most people felt it was their obligation. When we went to a volunteer military, we said, look, we're going to have to pay market wages to get people to volunteer and stay in. And when we set it up, they said we ought to get rid of the 20-year retirement for two reasons. Number one, one of the reasons we had this very generous retirement is because we didn't pay you much when you were on active duty. And the other is people are living a lot longer,
right,
you know, than they used to be, but we never did it. Now, when I was in government, I did make a change because we were paying it off the top each year, and I could see this was just taking more and more of the budget. So what we did is we transferred the unfunded liability, because up until 1986, there was no accrual basis or anything. We transferred that to the Treasury. We went to an accrual basis. But what we said is, you know, we're going to have to start bringing this down, and said, if you join after July 31st, 1986, you're going to get 40% instead of 50%. So we're trying to, you know, make a step in the right direction. Well, what happened was 13 years later, the military chiefs pressured the Congress and President Clinton to go back to the 50%. So now you had the higher pay, you still had the 50, you know, you still had the 50%. And then a couple other things happened. In 1995, we set up a health care program for military people who couldn't, you know, who retired and didn't live near a base, for example. It was called TRICARE. And we said, you want to enroll in TRICARE for a family, it'll be $460 a year. That should be adjusted each year to reflect, you know, the growth in health care costs. We didn't adjust it for 13 years because of what I call, you know, the military lobby. And so what happened is the government share, or the Pentagon share of that, increased each year, and more working age retirees didn't take the health care plan where they worked. They stayed on TRICARE. Mm. And as Admiral Mullen, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who just retired about 2 years ago, said, you know, health care costs are eating us alive.
Mm-hmm.
Then in 2001, it used to be when military people turned 65, like the rest of us, they went into Medicare. Well, Medicare, depending on what you choose, you have to, you know, pay, and, you know, that doesn't cover everything.
Right.
So they established another program called TRICARE for Life in 2001, which says you pay Medicare, we'll pay everything else, no co-pays, no deductibles. So what you have, and then finally, the base pay, the normal pay of military people, because we went to war and the country and the Congress had a guilt feeling, they kept raising that above the standard each year. And so what you have right now, when I tell people this, they're dumbfounded. You take what we call an O3, you know, a captain in the Army, Air Force, or Marines, or a lieutenant in the Navy. You take his or her base pay, housing allowance, and food allowance. Not the fact you don't pay for health care or contribute to retirement. That's almost $100,000 now.
Hmm.
And for an E4, which some of you remember, that's like a corporal, it's $50,000. And again, I'm not saying that this is too much or too little, but what's happened is we have gotten a situation where personnel costs, for the reasons I've talked about, are taking up an ever-increasing share of the budget. And the, finally, the military chiefs have said, hey, we have to stop this. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, they are not arguing. I mean, the proposal put out by Congressman Ryan and Senator Murray has been endorsed by retired generals and admirals.
Hmm. So how much money would the government save with that 1% reduction?
Actually, quote, I mean, it's $6 billion, okay? And you know, again, that's certainly not chump change, but in the overall scheme of things, it's not all that much. But I think the key thing, and Congressman Ryan put this very well in an interview with Weekly Standard, where he said, this is the beginning. We've got to kind of try and bring these, you know, costs down.
Those who are opposed to this, and I'm sure we'll hear from some when we go to phone calls here in just a moment, say that this is a big deal to retirees. And they talk about, when you talk about 20 years getting benefits, that a lot of these people have devoted their lives to the military. So everybody else has been out in the workforce, and they've been able to secure higher incomes, which will determine what their Social Security benefits will be. They've been able to move ahead in careers, whereas if you're starting something after 20 years in the military, it's a rough go. And so you ought to be getting some of those higher benefits from the military, because you're at an unfair the other people are at an unfair advantage.
Well, again, you know, if you go back, first of all, keep in mind when we talk about this is going to hurt the veterans, most enlisted people, the vast majority of the Army and Marine enlisted people who bore the brunt of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan are not going to retire. as I tell people, you know, the Marines, when you're in the frontline units, is like running backs in football. They, you know, they want to keep that force, you know, young. They're not affected by this, okay? Only about 17% of people who join the military ever serve long enough to retire. The other thing is, over the last decade, military compensation, the what we call regular military compensation, has increased by about 40%, while the rest of the country, the wages have stayed flat. Okay, there's been no real increase, you know, for the average American. That's why we have this big debate about income inequality. So they've stayed flat. The military's gone up by about 40% in real terms. So again, it's hard to say that, you know, you're not getting this. The other thing, and I pointed out in the article, a lot of times, depending on how long you stay in the military, I mean, if you want to be an airline pilot, the government's paying to train you. And you fly, sure. And then you go out and get a job. So there are a lot of, transferable skills that, people have. Is it perfect? No, it is not. But when you have a volunteer military, you try and devise a system that gets and keeps the people you want. And I got to tell you something else. This 20-year retirement, we lose too many people because they go out and they say, I got my 20 years, get 50% of my high three, I'm going out now, and you still want them. There's no incentive for them to stay. Other times, after about 14 or 15 years, they want to leave. You want them to leave, but you keep them around for another 6 years because you don't want to be heartless. I have recommended, for over the last decade, let's go to a very generous 401k plan for military people, and this will give us much more flexibility in managing the force.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the entire DOD budget, is this cost of benefits and cost of employing people in the military, is that the major cost or is it weapons?
Well, right now, if you take a look at the military budget, pay for the military people, your civilians and contractors is half the budget.
Is it? Wow.
Oh, yeah. And it's going up. Okay, it is going up. Now I got to tell you something else, which, again, remember I told you I transferred the unfunded liability out. This year, the taxpayers, the Treasury, paid $50 billion to military retirees. The Pentagon budget, now that it's on an accrual basis, was charged less than 20. So in effect, when you say the defense budget is, 526 or something, well, really it's $30 billion being paid, by the Treasury because of the system I put in, but that number was supposed to be down because we were going to 40%, and they undid that.
Mm-hmm. So where do things stand now with this provision? The budget was passed. The amount of money, the 1% reduction, will take place now, or it's still open
to
conversation?
It doesn't start till 2016.
I see.
So, and again, remember the deal that Congressman Ryan and Senator Murray is, for a 10-year deal. So, yeah, it doesn't go in until 2016. So people obviously have time to adjust. But I can't emphasize too much. We've got to take a look at the whole compensation system now, or else, as I say, and, this is not me saying, this is your military chief saying, we're going to be like General Motors. Was at one time where it was paying so much in retirement it didn't have enough money to, innovate and develop new products.
Do you, though, considering the nature of the work and how tough this work can be, do you need to have really superb benefits in order to attract people to serve in the military?
Well, again, you go back and you take a look at, what gets people in. By and large, the all volunteer military didn't start off very well. But once we figured out what to do and got the right ads, we were getting, keep the people we want. Now, when the wars became unpopular, then you had a problem. From 2003 to 2007, we had to lower our standards. But right now, we're throwing people out. As the war ended, we're trying to go back to the normal levels. So it is not. Now, again, and nobody is diminishing it or downgrading it, but, when you get to this question, well, how much can you pay a man or woman to put his or her life on? It's the same question you have for policemen, firemen,
right.
Other people, first responders who, deal with danger all the time. So we've set a standard. It's called the Employment Cost Index, and we followed that, and we were doing fine, with that, but we really got carried away. I mean, for example, with the healthcare thing. I mean, when we did a study a couple of years ago, we found out a retired admiral who was a member of Congress was staying on TRICARE. rather than taking the congressional thing. And, you know, if you look at a retired admiral, they can get 100% of their base pay, you know, in retirement.
Maybe we should all go on TRICARE.
Pardon me?
Maybe we should all go on TRICARE.
In fact, it's funny. I take the health care plan where I work at the Center for American Progress because I want to practice what I preach. But for TRICARE, I mean, it would cost me just about nothing.
Right. Lawrence Korb is our guest this hour. He is senior fellow at American Progress, senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, also adjunct professor at Georgetown University. He's got a really incredible resume. He was Assistant Secretary of Defense from 1981 through 1985, Reagan administration, where he administered about 70% of the defense budget. He also is retired military. He was serving on active duty for 4 years as a naval flight officer and retired from the Naval Reserve with the rank of captain. Then he got a PhD in political science. He has, over the past decade, made over 2,000 appearances as a commentator on TV and radio shows, and he's the author of a number of books, including The Joint Chiefs of Staff, The First 25 Years, The Fall and Rise of the Pentagon, American National Security Policy and Process, Future Visions for U.S. Defense Policy. So he's with us. We can broaden our conversation a little bit considering his vast background in all things military. We're talking about, which has been of some concern, the provision of the budget that reduces the annual cost of living adjustment for military retirees by 1%, active military at the moment. And we're also talking about how much of the military budget goes toward employees, half. I didn't realize it was that high. And everybody agreeing that the current Department of Defense budget is unsustainable in the long term. So what do we do about it? Here's how you can reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655 for you to join our conversation. The email is talk@WPR.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we are also on Twitter, and that's at K Dunn Show. We're discussing reducing working age retiree pension by about 20%. And what do you think of it? To you in a moment, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Lawrence Korb is our guest this hour, senior fellow now at American Progress, and we start our phone calls, and we have tons of them, with Scott in southern Wisconsin. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I have two questions for Mr. Korb, and I want to say I thank him for his service. I spent 22 years of active duty in the Army, retiring at the rank of lieutenant colonel, 1 year in Iraq, and 9 years overseas. What wasn't mentioned in this bill that was passed is that what happens at age 62, is there some sort of a catch-up to bring people back in line with the cost of living? He can think about that one. And then the second question is, he mentions a lot about active duty people being overpaid. And I'm wondering how Mr. Korb reconciles the fact that many of the E-4s that he mentioned are on food stamps while they're on active duty because they don't make enough money.
Okay, let's take the first one, the age of... At 62, they'll recompute it. So if you get to be 62, it'll go back to where it would have been if you were getting the whole increase the whole time.
Terry, when our civilian leaders are willing to put us on the chopping block without even a ceremonial cut in their own pay, and I'd like to hear his comments on that.
Okay.
Okay. Well, the other thing is federal civil service employees, including foreign service officers, haven't had a raise for 3 years. They've also more than tripled their contributions that they have to make to the retirement funds. So it's not just military people, it's government workers. And I'm not going to get into the other thing to defend with our elected officials. That's a whole, whole other subject. And then in terms of an E4 today, RMC, which would be base pay, housing allowance, and the food allowance, for an E-4 is $50,000. Now, if you go on food stamps, I don't know what your particular circumstances are, but we don't have the problem. When I came into office, it was terrible because we had fallen well below the employment cost index. In my first year in office, we had two raises of a total of 25% to bring it back up. And so it hasn't fallen below. In fact, it's above that now. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I haven't seen the numbers lately. Could be an occasional person. Another thing that happens is a lot of these young kids, as you probably well know, get taken in by these payday lenders and a whole bunch of, you know, other stuff. But their RMC, you know, is about $50,000 right now for an E-4.
And please forgive my ignorance here, but what exactly is an E-4?
Okay, that's like a corporal. Okay, you know, the enlisted ranks, you go, you know, E-1, you know, you're, you know, kind of what we used to call a buck private, and then you go up.
Okay.
And then, you know, you can get up to an E-9, which is like a master sergeant. Officers go O-1 to O-10, which is a four-star general starting off as a second lieutenant or an ensign.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Scott, very much for your call. Let's go to Claire in Baraboo. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. First, I have a couple questions for your expert. Number one, is it true that our defense budget in this country is 10 times higher than the next nation in the world's budget?
All right, the first thing, we spend more, literally, about more than the rest of the world combined right now. In other words, we're about almost half the world's military expenditures. If we get out of Iraq and Afghanistan, we'll probably go down to 40% of the world's military expenditures. But we spend more than the next 14 nations combined right now, most of whom are our allies.
Okay, that's pretty crazy right there. And, sir, how many bases do we have around the world at this time? If I heard this correctly, my jaw dropped. When we closed down the bases in Iraq, I believe I heard on NPR there were over 500 bases in Iraq.
Well, yeah, we did have an awful lot. But the real question, and which you raised, is very important, because we're also, as we deal with, you know, cost in the Pentagon, what we might call overhead cost, what we need to do is take a look at our worldwide military base structure. You know, for example, it doesn't make a great deal of sense to still have tens of thousands of troops and bases in Europe, because there's no real threat there anymore. And in fact, what happens is the Europeans then become free riders. They cut their defense budget, and they figure, well, why should we have to worry? The U.S. is still there. So we do need to take a look at that. I mean, you know, the troops that we have, you know, around the world. We also need to take a look at the bases here in the United States. Secretary Hagel tried, and the Congress turned him down this year, to have a new what we call base realignment and closure commission to take a look at our base structure so we can reduce our overhead.
Go ahead, Claire.
How many bases do still exist at this time, sir?
Around the world?
Sure, around the world.
Around the world. I would say if you count all, I usually more look at the number of troops rather than the number of bases. But, you know, there are, you know, I would say, you know, maybe 40, 50 bases around the world. You know, you've got bases in Japan, for example. You've got, you know, a lot of bases in Europe. We have, you know, we have an Africa command. We have troops in Africa. Now, there's no quote-unquote no base, but there are troops, you know, troops there. And then, of course, you have your naval forces that are, you know, we've got Navy ships in Singapore, for example. We've got Navy ships in Bahrain. So, yeah, we have a global military presence.
Mm. Thank you, Claire, very much for the call. And when you talk about we should look at some of those bases that we have and why shouldn't Europe shoulder more of the bill for their defense needs, well, why don't we look at it? Those troops have been there for a long time.
Well, they have. And again, it's the whole question of inertia that, you know, you see the defense budget in the first decade, particularly after 9/11, went up for 13 straight years in real terms. And at the peak of it in 2002, even if you control, I mean 2010, even if you control for inflation, we were spending more than at any time since World War II. So what happened is people didn't have to make the hard choices. Now, even though the budget is still, in comparative terms, relatively high, it is not going to stay that high. And so it should force us to take a look at, you know, a lot of these things that and make reductions where we should.
Let's go. Thanks, Claire, for your call. Mark in southern Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. We get into the perpetual question of people who serve and risk their lives versus we can't afford this. And I'd like to suggest that we split our thinking about it and try to treat combat people and people in harm's way differently than people who are just sort of doing a job for 4 years or 20 years. I went to a prep school, got education. One of the guys in school with me decided before he got out that he was going to be in the military, join up right away. He was a cook on a ship stationed off of Texas for 20 years. Since he retired at age 38, which is 15 years ago now, I've had the pleasure of paying him the pension for being a cook for 20 years. I'm not quite sure we need to be giving these people great benefits if they're just sort of doing a job that's not dangerous and not in combat. I certainly think we need to treat the combat people much differently than that and perhaps a lot better than we are treating them at present. But we could probably look at reducing costs quite a bit by, you know, by treating people somewhat differently in two different functions.
Oh, that's an interesting point. What do you say to that, Lawrence?
Well, I mean, Mark raises a good point. You see, part of the problem, you get into this debate, and people then will focus, for example, on the soldiers and the Marines who, you know, bore the brunt of the fighting, you know, particularly in Iraq and Afghanistan. And they forget, you know, that many, many people in the military never go to combat. And I think that's important. Now, we do have combat pay. So when you are in a combat zone, you get an extra, you know, amount of money each month, and then you don't pay taxes. So there is, a benefit there. But there again, what happens is you have that, and the next thing you know, people are beating the system. For example, you get combat pay if you're in Bahrain. Well, yeah, I guess it's near Iran, but, I mean, there's no hostilities going on, you know, there now. So those that system, you know, people game the system. In fact, when I was in Vietnam, what used to happen is these generals and admirals would come over on the 31st or the 30th of the month and stay till the 1st or the 2nd. Then they get 2 months combat pay. So people, you know, we've changed that now. It depends on how many days that you are in the combat area. But Mark raises a good point. Yeah, it's a military pay system. You know, it basically it doesn't give you what you need, and that's part of the problem, because it treats everybody the same, and you don't want to do that. Now, we do have, you know, for example, you get flight pay or submarine pay, and, you know, you get special bonuses to reenlist. So we do tend to mitigate it somewhat. I'm sure your friend the cook never got a bonus to reenlist, whereas if you are a pilot, you know, you probably would get a bonus to reenlist.
Thanks, Mark, very much for the call. Dave, a retired soldier, sends this email. While the COLA cut doesn't hurt me personally, I'm part of another despised group, federal employees, but many of my brothers and sisters, especially those disabled or elderly, really need their military pay. And by the way, most of my TRICARE benefits have ended up at the Mayo Clinic for cancer treatments for sarcomas I probably picked up due to my service in Iraq.
Well, again, then you're raising a couple other issues here.
Mm-hmm.
If, in fact, you know, I am wounded and I get discharged, then the VA pays. We're not talking about the veterans' benefits there. You know, if I get the disability from the VA, that's a separate type of thing. Now, sometimes you do retire and then you get disability, but we're not talking about that. So the VA takes care of the wounded people. And if this person comes down with a combat, you know, related disease, yeah, the government should be paying, you know, for that. If you go to a VA hospital or a military hospital, you don't have to pay. Now, if you go to Mayo, I don't know why, you know, the person went there, whether there were no VA facilities available or, a military, you know, bases that could, do it. If you do go to Mayo, then you've got this TRICARE. If you're under 65, which you're paying, it's about $500 a year now for a family. Or if you're over 65, you get TRICARE for life, and whatever Medicare doesn't pay, the government pays.
Thanks, Dave, for the call. And another email, a retired military who couldn't hold the line. Why don't they cut out the F-35 program? How much would you save then instead of cutting pay for retired military?
Well, again, this is, the F-35 is, you know, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, who manages the program, said it's acquisition malpractice. I mean, yeah, people ought to be, you know, really, somebody ought to be penalized for this. And I've written about this, and Secretary Gates and Deputy Secretary Carter. I mean, you know, these people go out and we say, oh, what a great job you've done. And, you know, they've messed up a lot of these, a lot of these programs. But I think the real question is not just the F-35. It's what do you want to spend on personnel? What do you want to spend on weapons? And I think Secretary Chuck Hagel has put that. Okay, you have a choice. You don't want to deal with compensation, then you're going to have buy less weapons, and you know you're going to do less training, which is another thing, you know, that is outside of the pay. And those are the trade-offs you're going to have to make, because even if you spent the whole federal budget on defense, you can't buy perfect security. And so where we are now, we pretty well have settled that we're going to be spending, you know, about $500 billion a year on defense, which, again, if you're even controlling for inflation, is about $100 billion more than we spent at the end of the Cold War and at the end of, the end of war in Vietnam. But with compensation taken so much, you're going to have to make a choice. Do you want to have the weapon system? You want to pay. And if you say, well, no, we've got to pay the people, then you don't have you're not going to be as ready or capable.
Well, you also have to have a pretty deep examination of what the threat is now, don't you?
Well, you do. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a whole other, thing.
Right.
They're still building a lot of weapon systems that we started in the Cold War and take a look at the size of the force. I mean, before 9/11, the Army was about 490,000. We're up to 570,000. They only want to bring it back to 490. Well, maybe we could go lower, because we're not going to be foolish enough to invade, or do nation building again, as, was evidenced by the way we're responding to Syria and Libya.
Mm-hmm. Mark from Stevens Point wants to know if the overall cost of the budget might be going up because of contractors, and how that might negatively also be affecting our ability to pay our own military personnel.
Well, what happens with the contractors, and this is, the government can be so frustrating when you deal with it. Everybody, people who run for office that want to cut the size of the government will go after the number of civilians working for government. Okay, so vote for me and I'm going to cut the government, and that's one way, to do it. What happens is if you cut the number of civilians in the Department of Defense too much and you got a job, then you turn to contractors. And again, that becomes, you create two problems. One, number one, you really want contractors doing what's inherently governmental, the whole question of the private sector. And then number two is they raise what is going to be the cost of this. But if you normally you have the money. See, Congress will appropriate the money, but they'll tell you can only hire so many civilians. So if you got a job to do, then you get the contractors. When I was there, I got them for a couple of years to take the ceiling off the number of civilians. Just give me the money and I'll do it. But then they realized this didn't play, too well back in Peoria.
More phone calls in a moment. Our guest this hour is Lawrence Korb. He is now a senior fellow at American Progress. He is retired military, 4 years naval flight officer, retired from the Naval Reserve with the rank of captain. He served as Assistant Secretary of Defense, Manpower, Reserve Affairs, Installations, and Logistics from 1981 to 1985. He's a senior fellow at American Progress, also senior advisor to the Center for Defense Information, adjunct professor at Georgetown University, prolific author and commentator. He's had a huge life. And we're talking, our conversation was prompted by this story that I'm sure you were aware of, that as part of the budget, we were looking at a 1% decrease in retirement benefits for military. And we're talking about that, the military response, which people, understandably, who have served, who are upset about that. Our guest has written a piece. I'm trying to find the beginning of it. I always have too many papers. Here we go. The piece that is titled, Here's Why the Proposed Military Retiree Benefit Cuts Are No Big Deal. He writes that the provision in the Ryan Murray budget reducing the annual cost of living adjustment for military retirees by 1% is really, the concerns about it are misleading. And he talks about why and how it does not break faith with the vast majority of men and women who are in uniform, since most of them will not retire. So we're talking about that this hour. But our conversation, of course, broadened because of his background to a look at how much we pay for the military and some how much goes to pay for those who are enlisted and how much goes for bases and wars and all of that. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. Lines are open for you right now, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, where we now have over 4,000 people who like us. Thank you very much. Is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Leave messages there, or we're on Twitter at KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go back to phone calls for Lawrence Korb, and we go to Carrie in McFarland. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. I wanted to point out that most of the disabled veterans, people disabled by their service in the war, are retired military, and they are affected by this. And if we start cutting benefits without examining where the military is going, we're creating more and more disabled people. More and more of our kids are getting injured, and we're not taking care of them. Disabled veterans do not live well, and they need the medical benefits. TRICARE is not extravagant for a disabled veteran. We need to listen to the point that Mark made, and I think that your guest needs to take a much more nuanced view of this issue. Don't just balance the budget on the back of the people who are least able to take care of themselves.
All right, Carrie, thank you for the call.
Well, again, if you take a look at the vast majority of the people who were wounded in Iraq and Afghanistan, they are not career military people. They are people who are not going to do the 20 years, okay? The young men and now women who fight on the front lines are not. If you get wounded, then you're medically discharged and the VA takes care of you. You're not medically retired. Now, there are some people who get medically retired and then get, you know, disability. That's a whole different type of, type of situation. But nobody is going to say you can't go. If you have a wound, you can go to a veterans hospital. They have to take care of you. You don't have to go to TRICARE, which, you pick your own, doctor outside. Now, there's no doubt about the Bush administration messed up the VA, and Obama's been trying to catch up because they never thought these wars would last so long. And, we didn't. The VA is not up to its job, but that's different. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about a man or woman who serves at least 20 years. He or she retires. Then, they get their retired pay and it goes up, accordingly. And if you read my article, what I try to point out in there is if you joined in 1986, you were only supposed to get 40%. We changed it to 50. Nobody is, talking about that. We also talked about the fact that the base on which your retirement is paid is basically much higher. It's about 20 percentage points higher than it would have been if we had not been giving these other raises. The same way with TRICARE. When it was set up, the idea was government, you would pay 25%, the government would pay 75%. Right now you're paying 8% and the government's paying 92%. So it's not breaking a promise. Basically, the promises that have been broken up to now have been, giving more benefits than, was supposed to be.
Lawrence Korb, tell me again, how long has TRICARE been around?
Started in 1995. We used to have another program called CHAMPUS. And what happened was, military people say, well, you promised us if we retire free health care for life. No, they didn't. In fact, a couple of people went to court, and the court said no. Now, what they say is that if you retire and you want to go to a military facility, then and they have room, they will take care of you. But then people said, well, I don't want to live near a base. You're closing bases. And so they said, okay, we're going to give you this program. It's called TRICARE. And what it will be is you pay $460 a year. In fact, when I testify, Congress said $460 a month. I said, no, $460 a year for your family.
Mm-hmm.
And when we set it up, we said, and this premium will raise each year in accordance to what happens to medical, you know, inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Because of pressure from what I call in this article the military line. By the way, I belong to these. I belong to the American Legion and, you know, the Military Officers Association.
Mm-hmm.
They never raised the premiums until 2013.
Woo.
So what happened was you basically were paying less than you were supposed to. If that premium rose the way it should, the premium this year would be about $3,000 a year. So that's more than you're going to lose with this 1%.
And why didn't they raise the premiums?
Because of pressure from the military lobby.
Hmm.
You see, what happens is it's very tough. If you haven't been in the service or you don't have a reputation as, you know, a real hard line to stand up to these lobbies, because, again, people don't realize. As I go about the country, they'll say, well, you're trying to take away from the wounded veteran. No, that's the VA. It's a separate budget. It has nothing to do with this. See, people don't understand that because, you know, they don't understand, you know, the military. Similarly, up until 2001, when a retiree turned 65, he or she went into Medicare like the rest of the population.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they changed that. And so it's now TRICARE for Life. And, you know, people who get older will tell you this. I happen to be one of them. Your medical expenses go up.
Mm-hmm.
There's no copays. Okay? There's no, you know, deductibles. So what happens? You overuse, you know, medical facility because it doesn't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, and as I mentioned before, when, you know, we did a study and we found out a retired colonel, a lieutenant colonel, was working for Booz Allen Hamilton. You know, that's the firm where Snowden was.
Right.
Okay. Making well over six figures. We couldn't get, but it was well over six figures. He stayed on TRICARE. Well, that's not what we intended.
Right.
It was intended for working age who didn't have it or, you know, couldn't afford it.
Yeah. Now that you brought up Snowden, though, it makes me want to ask you what you think about this this NSA ruling by the judge, federal judge, and the extent of NSA.
Well, I commend the federal judge for doing it. I think what's happened is because we can do it, we did it without, you know, thinking through. And I do not think you ought to have a military person run an NSA. It should be a civilian because, again, a military person, hey, I got to stop the threat. So I'll, you know what I mean, I got kind of a wartime mentality, and it's very tough to, you know, balance these things. And so, no, I commend it. Interesting enough, was appointed by Bush, and he was appointed the day before 9/11.
Yeah.
And no, I think that we really, I mean, I think we've really gotten carried away, and you know, people, I mean, are amazed that, and you know, the stuff that Snowden's put out. We had no idea we were doing this.
Right. Yeah, nobody knew. We've had several callers and emails say that we have 737 U.S. military bases.
Oh, okay.
That's a lot of military bases.
All right.
All right, let's go to Corey in Edgerton. Hi, Corey.
Hi, how are you?
All right.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess there's a couple of things I wanted to express. First of all, I didn't hear I only came in within like the last 10, 15 minutes, so I didn't hear anything prior to that, but a couple of comments that the guest made about how this isn't that big of a deal. It's a 1% decrease. I am retired military. I joined at 19, and I retired at 39 about 5-6 years ago. You know, and I'm really thankful for my pension, but I look at it as, somebody has now told me that I've got to give up somewhere between what $40,000 and $80,000 of my income that I was planning on using. That's my children's college education. That's money that's very important to me. Now I got to change my plan. I don't also like the characterization that, well, because when I joined, it was initially 40%. Retirement base pay, and then because the economy was really good and people were getting out of the military in droves and they needed to do something to keep military in, they decided to give folks the option of either taking the Redux plan with a $30,000 bonus or moving to the 50% plan. I chose the 50% plan because it was a better deal. Now, essentially, I'm being given the Redux plan without the $30,000 bonus.
Well, a couple of things here which I think are, you know, important. I can understand. You're wrong. That's not why we changed it. In fact, we were throwing people out of the military in the 90s because that was the end of the Cold War and the downsizing. There was no reason to do that to keep people in. There's no data to support that. It was done because of the military lobby, all right? And I think that's important. What I try to point out in this article is the military lobby never mentions this anytime anybody wants to make a cut. They don't mention the fact, that we did change it and give people a more generous benefit. So in effect, we're not breaking faith with you compared to when you came in, because by the time you turn 62, basically, you will not lose even under this 1%, nor the fact that the base pay went up. Went up more than it was supposed to each year, or the fact that TRICARE fees. If you add all that together, you're going to be better off than you would have had we, not changed anything or even put this 1% in. That's the point I was trying to make.
Thank you, Corey, for your call. Peter in Baraboo. Hi.
Thank you for taking the call. I'm coming from a different perspective. I happen to be a school board member here in Baraboo. We have some of the same challenges as I'm sure all public service employees, our military have, which this conversation is about. I applaud the conversation. It seems to me that patches and fixes are no longer the solution to the big problem. And it seems to me with the Affordable Care Act as a step in the direction toward a single payer, when we arrive at that and take the burden off the backs of individual silos, whether they're in the military or public service employees, teachers, et cetera, as well as, our working population, we will be able then to have a better understanding of how these pieces fit together and more money to do more things for our nation. I'll take my
stuff
off the air.
Thank you. Thank you, Peter.
Yeah, Peter makes a good point because, again, we're cutting pensions of policemen and firemen, and people aren't saying, well, they risk their lives. I mean, that's pretty, and so the idea that military, because of, what they do is, they have to be exempt. The only thing we can do is raise their benefits and never cut them, I think, is a very, very important point. And the other is the whole question of, our health care system, which I think you're going to have a whole other, program on.
Oh, we have.
But the fact of the matter is that this is Admiral Mullen saying that health care costs are eating us alive in the military. So if you don't do anything, they finally did raise TRICARE premiums a little bit. But you should see the fight we had on that just to raise them $5 a month.
Mm. Well, you can see why. I mean, people get used to that.
Right.
It's not
yeah.
their fault they were given those benefits.
Right. And, nobody likes to have their benefits cut.
Right.
But what I try to point out in this article is compared to the things that military retirees in general have gotten over the last 10 or 15 years, this is not, I didn't choose the title Big Deal. I would have chosen a different, is not breaking faith with people.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you ever so much for being with us. You're just really a terrific guest, and it was such an informative hour. Thank you, Lawrence.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Yeah, our pleasure. Lawrence Korb, our guest this hour. He has quite a background and knows of what he speaks here because of his background. The piece that he was referencing is in new on defenseone.com, a new piece. Here's why the proposed military retiree benefit cuts are no big deal, not his title. But we'll put that on our Facebook page so that you will have a chance to read the whole thing, particular interest to those in the military, but to everybody, too, because the budget for employees for the military is one half the military budget, so it's a lot of money. All right. Thanks to Lawrence Korb, who is now senior fellow at the Center for American Progress. He was assistant Secretary of Defense, 1981 to 1985. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this program, and thanks to K.P. Whaley as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. I'm going to be on vacation for a little while. Family is coming in to celebrate the holidays, so I'll keep track of the news, but no heavy-duty reading of books. Maybe a novel or two for the next week or so. So have marvelous holidays, everybody, and we'll look forward to talking again in the new year. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.